Hi, I'm Kim.
I'm Tora.
And this is our podcast, Parenting Young Adults with Kim and Tora. Thank you for joining us today. Today, we have a number of topics following up, of course, from our last episode. And one of the first things we're going to do is we're going to have the pleasure of speaking with Tora's son about some of the police brutality issues that are occurring in America now. Mm-hmm. Tora, do you want to introduce him?
He is my oldest child. He's my son, Steve, who attended Howard University, graduated from UDC with a degree in media, and he's master media, not just media. So yeah, he's out in LA pursuing his writing, acting, and modeling career. And he's also a new father, which we're very proud of, his baby girl.
And we're very pleased to have him. Let me admit Steve into the podcast now. Do you see him?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, his screen.
Hi, Steve. How are you? Welcome.
Hi. Hey, what's up, ladies? How are you?
I'm great. Good.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to have you with us.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
We really wanted to have you on, especially right now during all the current affairs that's been going on in our great United States. And as you can see, your mother tried to do one of your numbers and get some curls and afro for this moment that we had today. We had this little victory.
I thought it looked cute too.
Thank you. The yellow for the, I don't remember if you remember the scene in The Wire when they threw the yellow paint on the police officer and he said, "Why yellow?" And he said, "It's a sign of war." So it was like, yeah, you know, we're doing this thing today, but I'm so proud to have you on, and I can't wait to ask you several questions, but I'm going to let my dear friend Kim start off.
I have one question that I wanted to ask you, which may have changed a little bit now that we've had this verdict today, but the big question I have for you is what it feels like to be a Black man in America in light of everything that is going on with all of these police incidents that appear to be increasing in frequency now.
Oh, wait, so y'all actually have to update me on the verdict because I haven't turned on the news.
He's in LA 3 hours okay, behind.
Well, then let's let you answer first, then we'll tell you the verdict and see if that changes how you feel.
Okay. I mean, I think my mom has definitely provided me a sense of security so that being a Black man in America is different for me than probably most other Black men in America. I have experienced racism, but on a minute level. And I feel like I've been surrounded by a number of people throughout my life growing up that have been of a non-Black influence that have influenced my life. And so, growing up Black in America, I can definitely see coming from other members of my community how it can be hard, most certainly walking down the street, going to the gas station, just going to grab a bag of Skittles. I mean, anything. It's, you definitely get noticed. You definitely get seen. Police definitely harass you or bully you in a number of ways that are just kind of unimaginable. But I definitely think we've had a point in our lives where change is necessary. And I mean, not just with other races coming together to help the Black community, but within the Black community. It's time for us to help each other. And I mean, despite all the crimes that other people put on us, the things we do to each other does not help. And I think digs us a deeper grave than we are in already.
Okay.
Have you had any hands-on experience with racial profiling or feeling like you were wrongly accused of anything in our judicial system as you were growing up or as an adult or anything? Do you feel like you were ever singled out or do you think?
No, it was twice, maybe two times I felt like I was singled out. One time I was walking across the street in DC with a friend of mine. We had just gotten off work at a restaurant. And it was pretty late. It was probably like around 10 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And we were walking across the street to this 7-Eleven in DC. And this the girl who I just so happened to been walking with was not like a romantic partner of mine at all, but we just so happened were holding hands as we were walking across the street. And she is a white girl. And a cop came into the 7-Eleven that we went in. Mind you, we had already been in the 7-Eleven, got our items, and had proceeded to check out. We were actually on our way out of the door from the line. And then these two cops came into the 7-Eleven and started to ask us why we crossed the street without the crosswalk sign on, because it's jaywalking or something like that. Mm-hmm. And mind you, we were just saying we had just got off work. It was really late at night. There was no one on the road. And so we just kind of looked both ways and crossed. And normally it's never usually an issue, especially on U Street in DC at night, but when there's like no one on the street, there hasn't been a problem, at least in the 10 years I've lived in DC. But nonetheless, he ends up not being pleased with our answer. And he goes, "That's the answer you're going to give?" And then we go, "We're not entirely sure what you want us to say." And then he goes, "All right, you're under arrest," or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I immediately just pulled out my cell phone and started recording. And he didn't end up arresting me after I started recording, because I just felt like it was just illegal. It was just wrong. If I committed an illegal act of jaywalking, you should have stopped me in the act of jaywalking. You had ample time to come in to address the issue while I was in the 7-Eleven for several minutes. And then on top of that, he came into the store to try and address this particular crime he says I committed, and didn't even tell my the person who I was with that they committed the same crime. We were holding hands when that happened. So it was like, I'm getting in trouble, but she isn't. And so I ended up getting like a $10 jaywalking ticket or something.
It sounded like you said it was more than one police. Was there more than one?
Yeah, that was more than one.
And the other one didn't say anything, as in?
Nah, the other one was white.
And he didn't stop him or correct him and say, "This is ridiculous." Nah. It just went along with it as if it was okay.
Yeah.
See, that's the problem I have. That's the problem. Two can't be, you know, witnessing one thing happen and no one speak up.
Two Caucasian officers. These are two Caucasian.
One was black, one was Caucasian.
And that which one confronted you?
The black officer.
Of course.
Are you kidding?
Of course. Did you feel like what I'm feeling, like he was trying to prove himself to this Caucasian officer? Because that's what I'm feeling.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, sometimes those things just become so ridiculous. I try not to think so deep into it and just let it go. Like,
you feel
that's why I didn't pursue anything beyond it at that point. It was just, you know, I mean, the anger and rage that comes with it is just not worth it.
You both felt anger and rage, or just you?
No, we both did. We both were upset. I mean, my friend was upset and said if I did go to court, she would go with me. You know what I mean? Like, it was a lot. I don't know.
That is a lot to have to deal with unnecessarily for not doing anything.
For crossing the street.
Well, for being an employee who now wants to go have a snack. I mean, you're just living your life, you know? That's crazy.
And it's like you try to protect your children from the world, but how can you protect them from law enforcement when everything you've taught them is if you're in trouble or if you need help, you know, call the police, you know, try not to.
Not anymore. I'm not teaching anybody that anymore, that's for sure. That's a lot. So the verdict, are we ready to tell him the verdict?
Yeah.
The verdict is guilty on all three counts. Can you
All three, yes. Man. Bring hand emojis. I'm telling you, I have.
That's so that people didn't write.
Oh, hey, I was thinking of that too. I mean, my face is still swollen from crying so many tears because I had already braced myself. When I saw all the barriers going up,
at 4:30. At 4:30.
Yeah, no, I thought he was going to get away with it too.
Yeah,
I did. And I looked at his face and I was like, oh, you're so shocked, aren't you? You're the one they're going to sacrifice. You didn't think it was going to happen, did you?
Yep. Yeah, I saw that face too, and I was really upset because I thought maybe, you know, you should drop your head in shame or put your face in your hands or look at the jury like, why me? I really didn't mean it, and I saw nothing other than,
Yeah, like, oh, so this is what we're doing?
Yeah, so it's like, oh, we'll get you on appeal. Don't get too happy. You're like, okay. This fight might not be over.
Steve, that's the one question I wanted to ask you, because I just think that you're in a unique position given everything that's going on. And I don't like to put you young men on the spot. I asked my son to call in too, and I was just going to ask him that one question so you're not on the spot. But Tora, is there anything else you wanted him to weigh in on?
I absolutely do. There was another case this week where there's a 13-year-old boy who was shot. Young Mr. Wright was shot and killed, and of course they showed us a video that said, oh well, you know, he could have had a gun. I understand the police officer rushing to judgment, but then there's this still where he's holding his hands up and clearly he tried to abide by whatever the police officer at 13 year old, yes, he was wrong for being out at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yes, he was wrong for wanting to, I guess, have, you know, be affiliated with a gang or join a gang. I don't want to even get down that part, because now I'm victimizing the victim. So I want to be able to just say, when you see young men like that in the world that you're ready to start raising kids, we're kind of done, but we're not done raising our children, but you're ready to start bringing up a new generation. How do you feel knowing a 13-year-old is not even safe to comply with the police, and you're ready to start?
I mean, there are children younger than that who have been penalized and victimized by law enforcement. Like, have you been watching the news? Like, I mean, it's, you hear these stories now, and they happen so often that it's made so many people desensitized to them.
Okay.
It's like, I mean, I heard the story. I didn't really look more into it because it's just another story of somebody being shot by the cops. Oh, and it's just like, at the end of the day, we're either going to have an all-out war or our government is going to actually step in and help and do something. But in the meantime, the only thing we can do is just try to be as safe as possible and not do the things that the cops, you know, immediately put red flags on us for. But, I mean, I definitely think it's, I mean, I have a daughter. I mean, it's going to be hard bringing her up. But at the same time, I just feel like I have to evolve with the trauma and learn from it and let her know how to deal with it as she's getting older. Because, I mean, it's just like, when will it end? You know, it's black and brown boys are always dying on TV, on video, on the news. So me getting upset about it every single time I see it isn't helping. And it's also just affecting me in a physically negative way that I just don't want to be anymore, unfortunately.
Am I, you sure this is not your son? He sounds like you.
I mean, I'm loving every word he's saying, and I'm
almost the same exact stuff.
It's so important to protect yourself, and to not allow whatever they're doing to have the negative impact that I think is actually intended. So I'm really glad that you're able to step back. And
I stress so much. I want to bubble wrap every kid, especially every black kid. I want to bubble wrap you all and protect you all, and I know I can't. So my next question is more so, are your friends? Do you have any friends that, and I would have loved to bring Palmer on to get his opinion. Hopefully he'll come on soon. And how do you all feel like we can do this as a family, as a black family, white family, bringing together? What can we do to fix this or begin to fix this? Because this has been going on forever.
Parents, adults, like real adults, people like people, I guess you can't really like vet someone's maturity level, but I would hope anyone over like 45 has some sort of maturity level. But I think that all adults over 45, parents over 45, need to seriously take control over the world again, because right now it's just being ran by a bunch of kids. Kids are running the world. Kids are being paid millions of dollars to influence more kids, to just cause more chaos. And it's just like, at the end of the day, it's not entertainment anymore. It's just making money off of people destroying their lives and further generations.
Thank you.
And it's just enough. Enough is enough. Like, kids need to stop being paid millions of dollars for making these cheesy, sleazy videos. I mean, if someone is going to be paid, then an adult needs to be paid this amount. And then a child needs to aspire to be making this when they get older. They shouldn't be like, you know, twerking at 14, making millions of dollars on TikTok. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just so weird to me. But yeah, I mean, like, if if adults would actually be adults and not let their kids bully them and parent them, then yeah, the world would be a lot better place. You know, like, kids shouldn't be running around doing whatever the heck they want to do. And that's what is happening around the world. So there's no type of discipline.
Very proud.
So true. And I am so glad to hear a young man of another generation have that kind of mature. That's actually a very mature viewpoint. Yeah. And I think that that's wonderful. There is another thing, a little bit off topic, that we had discussed in our last episode about white people moving into Black neighborhoods. And I was expressing my viewpoint on that. Mm-hmm. And your mom suggested that we ask you about that because she said you previously had made a comment when you were living in DC that Black people don't rob white people.
Say that one more time.
That Black people don't rob white people in the inner city.
Okay.
And I wanted to know what that meant.
Well, statistically, I don't know how true that is. That was purely based on observation, that particular statement I made. And that particular statement was made because living in Northwest DC, I mean, you can't really say that that was a bad part of DC. Everyone knows that DC has its parts, and I'm not going to name those right now. Yeah. But the area that I live in wasn't necessarily a bad part of DC, but it had its sort of gang criminal moments. And they were mostly from young kids that are just trying to, you know, live a street life. But a lot of times the crimes you see that were happening against members of our own community that were in college at Howard University. Yeah. Our cars being broken into, our laptops being stolen, homes being broken into, all of their collegiate items being taken away. And these are happening from Black students and the people who are committing the crime.
Your classmate was killed, remember?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
That was very sad. I mean, I even had some stuff stolen out of my car once, but like, I would say I moved out of DC about 2 years ago, but my last about 5 years in DC, when you notice the neighborhood kind of changing and I guess you could say gentrifying, for lack of a better term, when you see a lot of more white people coming into the neighborhood, the crimes were still happening to the Black people. Meanwhile, you can see like white people just enjoying the full benefits of this new neighborhood, new beautiful neighborhood, walking late at night, walking dogs late at night without a fear in the world. Because like when you first went to Howard University, one of the things they tell you was, when I went, and this was several years ago back in 2007, granted they might still say this to their students, but they would say, when you're walking out at night, walk in pairs or more. Do not walk by yourself. Like that was among the top three things that I heard walking into Howard. It wasn't, welcome to Howard, we have this great this. It was, welcome to Howard, this is what you're going to do to live. And it was like, wait, what? So, I mean, it was, you know, just having that sort of, having that, I guess, anxiety, the fact that any given moment, I walking out of my house to class or anything, somebody could do something harmful to me, was just, you know, it was a terrible feeling to have. And then as the years progress and you see other people moving into the neighborhood and them doing the things that you dreamed that you could do, because you feared for your safety, is just, I don't know, it's kind of an uneasy feeling about that.
And but, it's disheartening. And it really points to the fact of we need to find some self-love, some unity,
exactly,
self-respect, all of those kinds of things. Because in a perfect world, well, in a perfect world, there wouldn't be any crime at all. But mm-hmm. in a better world, if one were going to commit a crime, they would not do it against members of their own race, they would do it against outsiders. So it's exactly opposite of how, you know, it should be.
And I also think that when it comes to members in our community and sort of, I guess, doing things new to progress their lives, there's a lot of members in our community who come from low income or poor neighborhoods where they don't have access to the things that some of us have access to, or even white people have access to, where they can get a job that's paying for them to live a better life. And a lot of times members in our community tend to do things, tend to turn to things that make them quick money that are considered illegal. And I'm not necessarily condoning those things or blaming anyone for what they have to do to survive. But I also think that it's important for us in the Black community who have learned other ways of making a living to be able to regurgitate that back into the community, but also being able to have those members of the community be open to those changes so that they aren't stuck in just being stuck in repeating the same things over and over again, you know, living the street life, et cetera, et cetera. And not to say that that's, you know, the only thing that we do, but, you know, it's a common stereotype that tends to pull our community down is drugs and, you know, gang affiliated lives.
And so that just comes right back around full circle to unity. We need for us to come together, for those of us who have learned better to share that with others who don't know better, to create opportunities and to allow those young folks to come in to our businesses and to our operations and participate and learn new things that they can take back. We have a lot of work to do. And at the beginning and the end of the day, I think it starts with us.
Most definitely.
And can I just, I'm not trying to move too far off topic, but I just remember this conversation you and I had when you were at Howard and you were about to go to UDC. And you said, and I was very proud. I'm very proud that my child went to a historically Black college. I'm very proud of you for that. And I remember you saying historically Black colleges prepare you for life because of the struggle that goes on in the Black college. I never got into it with you and asked you what was the struggle from Howard to UDC, because you thrived at Howard, but you soared at UDC. What was the two difference of the colleges, being though they're both in DC? I mean, can you just tap on that?
I mean, I can only talk about my experience at the time, but my experience was also over a decade ago. So how the school is operating now is probably a lot different. And so I don't want to speak too much about my experience because the time was such a long time ago. But I mean, I just felt like
at the time, such an old man. It's such a long time ago.
Bless his heart.
I understand.
But I didn't connect academically at Howard at the scene. I connected on a social level with a lot of things there, with on a campus level, but not necessarily academically. And what they were offering me academically just wasn't fitting my energy. And so it kind of didn't lead me into where I wanted to be led to when it came to the success of being in college. And so that's when I took a year off. And then when I went to UDC, UDC was great, but I think I also went back in with a focus to get it done. And okay. I think that also helped as well too.
And you also pledged. You pledged at Howard.
I pledged at Howard, okay. Alpha Phi Omega. Alpha Phi Omega, National Service Fraternity.
Oh, okay. Zeta chapter, yeah. You do know I'm a Delta, right?
Okay, I see. Yeah, Alpha Phi Omega is blue and gold.
Okay. And
okay,
you're
Delta, I see you. I say, okay, Delta, I see you.
Yes. And so your degree is in media?
Mass media film production.
Oh, that's what my son is studying. He initially, at my suggestion, started off in business. And he just really wasn't enjoying it and said, you know, he wanted to change his major. And I think it's just important for people to do things that resonate with them. And now he really loves it. So he's going to have a degree from an HBCU.
Most definitely. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So that's really nice.
You definitely do. I mean, I think especially when you're in college, you definitely need. It's so weird because when you leave high school, I think everyone, it's kind of like an expectation that you go into college sort of knowing what you want to do. The thing is the first year in college is a year where you don't know what in the world you want to do, even if you think you know what you want to do. I mean, a lot of times people change their majors and stuff. And that's why even before I went to college, I told my mom, I said, Mom, maybe I should take a year off to figure things out because I'm not quite sure. And then there was this whole hassle about that. I'll let her tell you about that another time.
But you know what?
But anyways,
after you went to Howard may have been a better option, because then when you came back, you understood the urgency, the difference between what you could do with a degree, what you could do without. I don't have anything to say about the gap year part. I'll let her tell me that as you
speak. No. I mean, well, it's just
Now, let's take a little moment to recognize our sponsors.
Now back to the current episode.
In my experience, I just feel like at the time there was a lot of physical work for an I had to work hard, it seemed like, to get the education that I thought was just supposed to be given to me. Okay. Like, I thought it was just a matter of going to class, get the knowledge, take your test, and continue on. You know what I mean? Just like a evolved form of high school.
Well, I mean, yeah.
College comes with a lot more than just college. You know what I mean? There's life, there's bills, there's separating from your parents, separating from being home. The social aspect of life, learning who you are, you know what I mean? Because when you're in high school, I guess you kind of leave thinking, I'm an adult now, I'm ready to go. No, you're not. There's so much you learn between high school and the age of 30. And even in the beginning of your 30s, that's just like, I'm not yet grown. You know what I mean? And so it's just, it's a lot. You know what I mean? I think that people, I think it's funny how people kind of rush into college after high school. And I think that's the point I was getting to. I think everyone should take like 6 months, a year. If there was like a gap between high school and college where you can just put your mind in a place where you are prepared for that next stage in your life, I feel like that year is also like a crucial year where your parents can teach you some of the fundamentals of things that they just braze over in high school, like economics, taxes. You know, I mean, there are certain things that in school that aren't detailed explained that you kind of learn on your own, and it's confusing and pain and painful at the same time. But I just feel like a lot of things I learned in life would have been so much easier to have been taught in school, just prepare me on, because there's so much in school that I learned that I'm not using.
It's totally worthless. Yeah, I think that I actually, yeah, agree with that, that we have an education system that is, you don't want me to get started on how it's indoctrination and misguided and all of that. But there are a lot of things we are taught that are totally worthless, and so many things we need to know that we're never taught. But I will say to you that you seem to be very mature to me, and that other children may not benefit from a gap year in the way that you may have benefited. Because sometimes when a child is less focused and they take that year off, they get wrapped up in all kinds of things that never allow them to make it back to the path that they were on. But probably in your case, it would have been different.
Well, see, again, I don't think that gap year should be a year of just break. I don't think it should be a year of laziness. I think it should be definitely a year where, and I'm not saying it has to be a thing, but I think that, because a lot of kids will go to college their first year undecided, and then you've just spent $15,000. I'm one of these cases, on a year of college where you had an undecided major, and that year does not add to your major as far as the credits you need to graduate. Well, it's $15,000, but it doesn't, because when you change your major.
Basic courses, you're gonna have to take English, math, basic science, social sciences. That's what.
Right. I mean, you'll eventually have your basic courses, but there's only so many basic courses to take for the entire year. You're undecided.
Okay.
Yeah, you can knock out those credits in the first semester, but you're still undecided the second semester because you can't change your major until the next year. See, like I had my first year was pretty much wasted on undecided major. I couldn't audition for the theater program because they only allowed you to audition, it was like once a year. And if you didn't get in, you couldn't audition until the following year. The thing is about my first year is that I didn't even get to audition, because when I got accepted into Howard, it was after the audition dates. So I was just an undecided major for a full year because I was waiting to audition for their theater program, of which is a four or five year program, one of them. Wow. And that was just going to add on to the first year. I was already there.
Okay. So that's a special circumstance, because
That also made me think, like, you know, kids need to not waste money on any years of college where they're not actively studying what they want to do.
Yeah.
Well, so my theory was an idle mind is a dangerous mind. So I wanted you amongst your peers that were like-minded. I wanted you to be amongst people who were thriving in the same thing that you wanted to, education, you know, theater, media. I wanted you amongst that. I didn't want you out in the world that I grew up in, which I didn't see any positivity. If I had maybe a few other role models that I could have said, okay, he can handle that, or I can raise a child and handle seeing him out here in the world, exploring the world, getting it together, that probably would have been okay. But I didn't have that. Only role model I knew were educators and people who had gone off to college or were in college, which is, you know, your Aunt Talisa and her whole family and your godfather, Uncle Chris. All of those people were already educated. And I was like, no, this is the group I want to push you in. So That was where I always was when it came to college and you. I needed you to follow them. I don't know I didn't know that life, but I did know the life where I came from, which didn't have anything worth pushing you or saying, okay, go and explore this. That's not what I wanted for you. What I wanted is exactly what you're speaking of now, which is being able to see both sides. So when you, I'm assuming if you have more children, you'll be able to understand them and you'll be able to teach them in that gap year if they want to take one. I wouldn't have been able to show you the world that you can see now.
Having a gap year was because of my experience at Howard.
Okay.
Hindsight. You explain. Are we out of time?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I got a beep too. It's okay.
Okay. So like, me and you have a difference of opinion mm-hmm. when it comes to how I started off my collegiate. Mm-hmm. I guess studies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know I got accepted into a different college that I really wanted to go to, yeah. And like you just said, you wanted for me what you wanted for me, mm-hmm. and have this experience, mm-hmm. which in turn led me to the experience that I had, which was not necessarily the experience that I wanted.
Right.
So for me, my experience learning from that is that, one, I do want the best for my daughter and I want her to have these certain experiences, but I also have to recognize what is going on in her life and around her life and what she's going to want for her life too. And I have to respect some of these things and how I can nurture them and help them go better and help them fall along the line of what I would like as well. Mm-hmm. I can't just say, this is what I want for you and this is what will happen,
right.
Because that's what daddy say so.
That is now, so much on point, because I'm always saying that I recognize that my children have their own journey and it is not my role to impose my stuff on their journey. It is my role to help them navigate that journey as smoothly as possible. And that means letting you change your major, letting you pick the mm-hmm. university that you want to go to and being there to try to help you through it. I just cut you off, but in your mom's defense, just on this one little part, I did just come back from a trip from visiting my children down south where they both attend college. And I said literally to my daughter, I am so proud of you both. And I am so happy to see you here with other young people doing the kinds of things you are doing instead of having to be out in the world with adults and all kinds of people on a different path. So I understand her mindset about wanting, because to me, college, and I went away to college to Wisconsin for my 4 years. So I get all of that kind of thing you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But to me, college is an opportunity for our kids to kind of be on their own while they're still on the path we want for them. So they're kind of under our supervision. And it's like a good transition from mm-hmm. high school where you're fully under our right. supervision to adulthood where you're very mm-hmm. much more independent. That's what
I definitely think college is necessary. And when I say this in the aspect, like my daughter has a choice. She doesn't have a choice on whether or not she's going to college. She's going to college. She's going to college. Now, what she wants to do in college, I think it's definitely important for me to be a part of her life and figure that out leading up to what her interests are and stuff like that. Because having the experience that I've had, I can be able to help put her on the path she wants to be on, because I just know the avenues to get there. So, I mean, we have some time before she obviously gets to that age, but
it won't be that long. Trust me, it goes by really fast. We'll wake up tomorrow and she'll be in high school like you all were, but
that's too bad.
Just to bring light to this one situation, you did attend a Catholic high school mm-hmm. and I wanted you to be so much more. I wanted you to know both sides of culture. I wanted you to know that side of the Catholic high school that you attended, but I also wanted you to know the cultural side of historically Black educators that only, I think any Black university could have given you that, but the one I knew that we could afford, or the one that was closest to us, was Howard. I even wish me and Victoria would just attend I just think anyone, I mean, not just Black kids, I think everyone should attend a historically Black college. I think there's something there that can be learned, that can teach the world that we live in now about what could overcome. You know, I still think we have Jim Crow all the way up until present day. And I just feel like if everyone could attend a historically Black college and learn the things that I learned just investigating and documenting historically Black colleges and what they teach there, because I did attend Sojourner Douglas. And of course it wasn't historically Black, but it was a Black college. And I just remember having jaw dropping moments every day going, how come I didn't know this? How come I didn't know this? And I wanted my kids to know that. And I feel like you got it. I do feel like me and Victoria has skipped it, but I think you got it. I think you can live on both sides of the fence and know life. And I just think that if you can't learn it, like Kim, her family knows that. You know what I mean?
Because I did blackity black black, and you're gonna know about being Black if you're raised by me. There's no question.
She can only say it better than I can. She can say it. I can't articulate that. That's exactly what I'm trying to say out my mouth. I wasn't able to do that because I would be faking it with you. That you knew I didn't grow up like that. I grew up, I was pretty much the only Black kid in my elementary school all the way up until I almost got into high school. So, you know, it wasn't one of those things where it was even in my neighborhood. So I would have been faking it trying to teach you Black culture when I didn't even grow up as a Black cultural woman. So I thought that the college would be better fit for you, which that was only to appease me. And you're right, I probably should have let you go to Franklin Pierce, and that was the college that he got put, I was very proud of him, and he knows that, I hope he knows that, that he got accepted there, and it was very expensive, very nice school up in New Hampshire, I'll never forget it, see Steve? And I was very proud of you, but I was just like, you don't need any more years of this. So if you wanted to go there for your master's or your doctorate, I'd be like, yay, but I just wanted fresh out of Catholic school, I wanted you to learn some culture.
I understand that. And I certainly, and I think Steve, hopefully you don't learn it maybe as much as we did, but parenting is a trial and error. You don't really know. It doesn't really go exactly as you hope. You just do the best you can. You make the best decisions with the information you have at the time and pray that it all works out well. So it's not easy, you know?
Right. I understand.
Are we letting him off the hook? I don't want you guys to be too much on the spot so that if we want you to come back, you'd be happy to come back.
Definitely he's like, coming back because we got to talk about get out of there. We got to talk about discipline. I want to know his hands on how he's going to parent his sons in the future and his daughters in the future with punishment, discipline, taking away things, spankings. I want to know all of that.
So you have to spare the rod.
Are you going to spare the rod?
Spoil the child.
That's why we have to have him back on. Maybe things will change by the time he comes back on to answer that question.
No, I've experienced too many rods. No rods.
You've experienced too many. Okay, well.
We'll let him tell it.
When y'all get our discipline episode, we'll go.
If he had it his way, he had to walk to the tree and get the switch and clean it off. And
see, like she's telling you right now.
That never happened. That never happened. That was my grandfather's story.
Okay.
Well, thank you. I think that you're such a mature young man. I am so proud of who you are. And I think that you're exactly the kind of man, young man, we need in our community. And I really appreciate you coming on. And anytime, you're always welcome.
Thank you for having me, ladies.
I'm so proud of you, Steve. So proud of you. I love you to pieces. Thank you for coming on.
Of course. Y'all have a great rest of your show. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Love you.
Love you more.
That was so
nice. Back tears, girl. That boy is making me proud of him.
You have been such a wonderful young man. I guess my young man is not going to make it. We'll see. We still have another maybe half hour left. And if not, he'll be coming home soon. So I'll be able to tell him to just pop in and sit down and say something. So, absolutely. But you did a great job with him. And I get it. You know, we don't always know the right answer and the right thing to do. So we do the best. And some of who he is because he went there and had that experience. And he may not have been that same person if he had gone somewhere else. So, you know, you did what you knew to do. And actually,
I made an executive parenting decision on that one. And I'm never going to regret that, because I saw what I didn't like about a person that I loved. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. We're going to have to stop this right here. You are not privileged. You are spoiled, but you are not privileged. And we need to let you know what you have and what you don't have. And I felt like that avenue I was sending him on was going to teach him that. I felt like there's someone, and I'm going to say there's a delusional person that's in Congress right now. And I look at him and I'm just thinking, and I had to do my homework on him to find out, why are you like this? Like, how can you agree with this what's going on right now, and you're not speaking out in volumes? And then I said, I found out he had some patterns that I would, as a mom, if I was his mom, I would have been like, okay.
You know what, it doesn't only come from that. First, I want to say that even though Steve experienced some difficulty with the path you set him on, at the end of the day, it turned out great. And that's what the best that we can hope for. Mm-hmm. But I would say that with that kind of thing you're talking about now with the Congress member, that has to do with self-hate, in my opinion, because Clarence Thomas is from the sticks. And he has that same kind of foolishness, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and all this kind of stuff that if it had applied to him, who knows where he'd be now. So there's a thing with Black people. And I mean, again, you can't, I personally am not mad at them, but it's the constant repetitive programming.
You're not mad at them? I'm mad at them. It's because I feel like they're more dangerous than the person we predict could hurt us. I feel like they're very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. I do think they're very dangerous. I am very disappointed. And it's very hard when they're in a position like Supreme Court Justice or Congress member, because they have the ability
to- I'll say Tim Scott. If you said Clarence Thomas, I was thinking Tim Scott. And he's the senator. And I think the brother could have been a beautiful man on this planet, because he's smart as all get out. But the things he roots for and he doesn't speak out against just breaks my heart, because I'm like, you in such a high position. And I feel like somewhere during his upbringing, his rearing, that it got missed out on. Like, brother, come on.
You're a brother. You're actually a brother. And I think the self-hate, and the reason I try not to be angry with them, is because really they have merely succumbed to the programming that has been ingrained and still directed toward us really since the day we're born. And those of us who could step out of that are truly blessed, because most of us, a lot of those people your son was talking about, those ones getting into drugs, acting out, a lot of that stems from not really liking who you are, because the dominant society has told you that you are something bad. Then you're acting out in ways that are self-defeating. And whereas if you were able to love yourself and who you are, you would seek better for yourself. That's just my opinion.
I think that is one aspect, but then I think it's also the glamorization, one of the other things he was talking about. I think we've glamorized bad behavior so much that nobody even feels like it's bad behavior. They call it living your best life, doing you. And it's like,
which I remember I was like, I need people to stop saying that.
You need them. And I just saw that. I saw someone say that on TikTok right after you said it. And I was going to call you and be like, uh-oh. Someone literally had just posted seconds after you. I mean, literally after we got off the podcast last time. And someone's like, you know what? I'm so over everyone talking about they're living your best life. It's no much that much best in a whole lifetime. And I'm like, she just said this. Yeah. But I get it. I get it. It's not that much.
But I think the aspect that you're talking about perhaps is being raised in a non-Black environment and then maybe adopting those viewpoints that are adverse to the best interests of Black people.
You always can articulate what my brain thinks, but it doesn't come out my mouth like that, because I'm always trying to tread lightly so I don't, and not necessarily hurt anyone's feelings, but think that I'm saying something that I'm not, because I'm not saying that I'm not proud of him graduating from a Catholic school and getting a great education. I am not, that is something I'm very proud of. It's just that the the way you just said it is exactly what I'm feeling. All adapting certain characteristics and ideals that just don't benefit you and your children and your future generation if you don't know both sides. You can have one side, but you also have to know the other side. So when he said a lot of this comes from kids who are just raised in a way where they don't know a better way, so they choose the easier way or they choose the street life, made me so proud and almost had me in tears, because I was like, that's what I wanted you to see. They're wrong. We're not pacifying that behavior, but I want you to understand sometimes people only know what they know. You know what I mean?
And why they're doing what they're doing.
And what they're doing. But you don't see that side. God forgive me. I'm not mean to be teary. I was just so proud of him, because that's what I, you know what I mean?
He's such a great young man. Yeah.
Because I feel like when they speak of us, and I say they, meaning the Caucasian race, sometimes speak of us, they don't understand. Like, are you kidding me? Like, we're products of environment that were never taught anything else because of you, you know? And because of you putting your foot on our necks and not allowing us to rise, and even when we do rise, you snatch it from us, as we can give you all kind of receipts. You know, we become something else. So don't keep saying, look at them, look at them. That's the bad guy, because that's not always true. And when he can say, this is this and this is that, it makes me so proud, because that's all I ever wanted him to see. I don't want him to tell someone, you would get a job if you would pull your pants up and cut your hair and speak like this. I want you to understand that person might not have been taught this. So don't talk to him like that. Mm-hmm. Teach him. You know, I always say it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I felt like that's where Bill Cosby turned off a lot of young kids.
Yeah.
Because he came at him with that. And when did you not see both sides? You supposed to have known both sides. You were in the struggle. When did you forget?
And so even those of us who agreed with what he was recommending were turned off by his approach. Absolutely. And how he was going about it. And absolutely. The other thing that I wanted, that occurs to me, is that this is part of the reason why integration was not so great for us. Mm-hmm. Because when we were segregated, the lawyers, the doctors, the teachers lived in the Black community. So you saw them at the store, you saw them on the sidewalk or at church on Sunday. We were all there together, and you had a role model, someone that you could aspire to be like. But once we were allowed to integrate, then all those people, I don't live in the hood. All those people, you don't live in the hood. All those people who have the ability to show you better, to be better, and to be a role model are now out of the community. And all that's left are the people who don't know. It just begins to perpetuate itself. So
you see both sides of what I was striving for him, because I thought the same thing. I said to myself, I said, there's so many people who I've heard our president, President Barack Obama, after he got out of office, just poured gasoline on this man. And it hurt me to the core, because these were supposedly pro-Black people saying he did nothing for us. I was so angry.
What did he do, Tora?
But it was how heavy the head that wears the crown. You know, you're the first. And to be a seal and breaker for the first, you have to do things a certain way so you can make it easy for the next person to come in your
place. It's not going to be any next when you, well, I'm not going to say that, but not.
Yeah, no, I definitely believe there's going to be a next, and very soon, I believe that it's going to be a next. But I feel like if you go in there and the world is looking at you, waiting for you, and praying on your downfall, and you give them what they asked for, then it's like, okay, now we don't have to ever do that. We'll put things in place.
So there was absolutely nothing he could do. Like, now we see that there are bills being put forth to provide reparations to Native Americans, all this money being set forth to address Asian hate crimes, still nothing for us. And when we had a person in there who had an opportunity to do something for us, nothing was done. I just am at a loss to know
I feel like
I don't really follow politics that much, so I'm going to.
I feel like he did as much as he could with the hands that they tied once again behind our back. I feel like they were people even on his side that was against him. They were Democrats who fought against certain things he wanted to do and needed to do. So I think he didn't complain about it enough. I think he didn't go out in front of the people and say, "Yo, no, I'm fighting for y'all, but I got these cats on my back that ain't letting me do jack, and y'all not voting midterm elections to get them out of office, so I got some help up in here." I feel like it was, that's why I said how heavy the head that wears the crown, because he didn't, you know, tell us, okay, what we do next? Okay, we voted for you, now what do we do next? It wasn't his responsibility, it was all of ours to say, okay, yeah, we got him in office, now let's put pieces of this chess piece together so we can get the victory all the way. And we didn't do that. We didn't elect sheriffs. We didn't elect judges. We didn't elect certain senators and congressmen. We didn't come through for him. And then once it was all said and done, we blamed him for everything we didn't get, but we didn't do that much ourselves. So that's why I got so angry when our pro-Black people said, you know, he didn't do anything. It's like, come on, dude, the same person saying he didn't do anything. What did you do when he was trying to do something?
You know, I don't see him the way you see him. Mm-hmm. And when he first ran for office, back then I used to vote all the time. Mm-hmm. And I took my children mm-hmm. to the polls with me.
As I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I specifically made sure I did so that time so that they could be a part mm-hmm. of that process of voting for a Black man. But I don't see Barack Obama the way you and many Black people who just revere him. I don't see him that way. But I feel like
he was our first.
I'm not big on politics, so I'm
not. Great example of our first. No. I feel like he was an amazing example of our first. I just feel like now the second one got to get better. The third one got to get even better. But I felt like for our first, you couldn't have asked for a better man to shake his hand. You know?
Let's take a short sponsor break.
We will now return to our current episode.
No, I mean, yes, I just felt did. Like
some of the things he did, really, I am not on board with, but.
Well, a lot of people are. I have family members who didn't like the White House lit up with rainbows. I got family members who didn't like all the rights.
He was very supportive of the LGBTQ community. He certainly did some things to protect and support them. Which I didn't see him doing comparable things for our race, but I mean, he went over and killed some people in Africa that are claimed to be dictators who really were in favor of and helping their people. They're just things he did that I'm like, what are you thinking? But hey, that's not, you know, it's not a political podcast. We can agree to disagree. I don't totally... I mean, I do think that it was important that we did have a person with his skin color mm-hmm. in that position. Absolutely. So there's some Absolutely. Benefit to it. I'm not a total mm-hmm. Barack Obama basher, but mm-hmm. I just don't think that he did the things that we wanted him to do. And certainly not even during his second term when you really have more freedom because you're not trying to come back. That's when people really start dishing it out, doing whatever, and he didn't. So... you know, that's okay.
And I believe the second one will know better, will do better because they know better. And I feel like he laid out a good blueprint, trial and error, great blueprint for the next one to come in and say, okay, you know, I'm not going to be afraid to speak more, you know, my mind and say, you know, a little bit more stern. I mean, I think Trump kind of laid that blueprint. I shouldn't even give anybody else credit for that, but.
I mean, he surely came in doing what he wanted to do for his people, signing executive orders left and right. Joe Biden's really doing the same thing. They do what they want to do. And he should have, I don't have anything else to say about that. But, you know, a lot of Black people love him so much. He's their permanent president. So, you know, have at it if that's what one feels. I just don't feel that way.
Yeah, it's definitely... it was a prideful thing for me to just to have that role model and such a good man, no scandals, because he could have easily had some of the scandals that the past presidents have had. And for, I mean, I don't know if my son reveres him and loves him. I don't know, but I know for me, that was a guy that I can, you know, say, you know, if you want to be like somebody, be like that, you know?
Well, I mean, I certainly, at the beginning, I bought the posters. There's still one in the basement and put them up. And, you know, I mean, you know, on some level.
I'm not gonna lie. I had my pictures all up too. I don't know what happened.
I have some framed picture with him and Mandela and all of that. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm totally against it, but I just, I'm not a big fan.
Let's say. You don't go around campaigning, you know, he was the greatest ever. I get it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that believe that, and I just
A lot of people just straight out bash him all the time. I guess we're all across the spectrum. So Steve actually stayed with us for quite a good amount of time. And I think we're just like about 5 minutes away from being up to our hour. So I would ask, you know, what you would like to discuss for. Oh, you know, something you asked me to remind you of, the situation with your husband and the Buffalo Bills and the COVID shot.
Oh, yeah, I sure did. So we definitely going to have to talk about that. He ran away, so I can't ask.
Just now he ran away?
Literally just ran away.
He's not going to get on here, so he already
I'm going to make him do it. I'm going to make him do this because once my brother does it, he's definitely going to probably want to be on it. My brother's going to answer some questions Thursday. I just sent him his text message and let him know you got to get ready for Thursday. So
okay, yeah, I take it that Jordan's not going to make it. He never did.
Well, it's going to be plenty more times, and we definitely can't wait to. I can't wait to ask him some questions.
I want to ask him the same thing I asked your son. Like, what does it feel like being a Black male in this society right now, knowing everything that's going on? I really am curious to see how different men. Feel about different Black men feel about that. So I definitely want to ask him that very same
question. I want to ask him about relationships because I'm noticing that the younger guys, the 20-year-olds, they're not big on relationships anymore.
You know what? I let you obviously ask your son whatever you want to ask him. But with my children, I just tell them there's only going to be one or two questions and then you're off the hook because I don't want to put them on the spot. I want him to come talk about police brutality and how that affects him. But we'll have to figure out on another time if he wants to talk about relationships because
I want to know who's going to populate the earth. Like literally these kids are all on TikTok talking about, I'm good, I'm done. You know, I'm like, wait, y'all, no, we used to talk about want to get married, have some kids and have a family. What are y'all so young and you already know at 20 that you're good. So I was like,
they don't want to have kids.
You don't want to have kids or the relationship to have kids. Like, you know, it's like they want to put in laws where if a woman if a woman gets pregnant, they have choices not to deal with these kids anymore. Like, this is the new generation.
The men have a choice not to deal with the kids?
Men are wanting to, the young men, not older men, the younger men are wanting to put into law that if a woman, because, you know, there are women out here, we can't lie, that will get good student college guy look like he's going someplace and want to just spring a baby up on him, and they're like, well, if you do that after I told you I didn't want any children, well, here's the law saying I don't have to deal with this if you don't want me to.
In the first instance, if you as a young man don't want any children, then take the precautions to ensure you don't have any.
That's what I want to have the conversation about because
I want to have that conversation with Jordan, but
I wish I was sitting in on it.
He chooses that he wants to talk about it, but I don't want them to be on the spot on those kinds of complicated issues. But we'll see. Maybe, I mean, you know, my son's pretty mature for his age too. Maybe he wants to talk about it, but he have no problem saying,
Mom. It's crazy because Mia was like, Mom, you know Jordan. And when she showed me, I was like, oh my God, yes, that's him.
Oh, you didn't remember Jordan?
I remember, oh my God, they were very close. Did he tell you? They
were friends for a while.
They were very close. And I said, I didn't even know. And she's like, yeah, Mom. We were like thick as thieves. I was like, you sure were. Yeah. So then I was just like, okay, God, I can't wait to talk to him.
But if he doesn't want to talk about a thing, I'm going to tell him in advance. He'll be like, no. But I know that he will tell us. I want to know because there is a concerted effort. Well, there are multiple killings. They're being done for various reasons. But to me, there's a bit of a intensity that has mm-hmm. come about lately, where it's happening so frequently. And I just want to know how it's affecting.
Does it make you sad? Or are you numb to it?
Because I heard you say numb to it.
I think that's where I am too.
I'm not numb to it because I don't watch it. It makes me concerned. It makes me angry. I feel some emotion when an individual's life is taken away. But what it really makes me feel is how much we need to figure out something to stop it. Like, I don't want to be asking them to please stop, please stop. I want us to figure out a way to make it cease. Something's just got to give here, you know, and that's what really.
You think we need models? Like, they have Reverend Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, they had the Nation of Islam, the Fruits of Islam. They had that era before us, but what do we have? Who do you think we need? Someone? Do you think you? I mean, because we always talk about Cardi and Megan and, you know, Jay-Z and all the athletes, LeBron James, because I don't know any other ones, but we always talk about them. But do you think
people have some people? They have RZA Islam. They have this guy named Young Pharaoh, who YouTube just kicked off because he is so thorough. They have Sister Soulja, which is not exactly their generation. I guess she's not what she used to be, though, is she? But there are activists and people out there. I think the thing is to embrace them. I'm not sure, actually. I'm going to pull back on that. I'm not sure what the answer is, but I know the same way your son came on here and was very mature. My son is younger than him, but still mature for his age. I know there are a lot of sharp young people. And I think that one of the things we can do is to focus on those kind of people instead of, like he said, these young entertainers just out here exchanging their self-respect, morals, whatever, for a big pile of cash. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're focusing on the wrong people in these younger generations. And there are certainly some people who can make a difference and make us proud and have some solutions and some suggestions that we might want to get on board with. But I don't know what the answers are, but I am always looking for them. Whatever I think will work, buying Black, anything that I think that I can do to contribute to making our race better, I just do it. I don't care if it affects two people. Like those videos I was doing before I went to Africa, I will do it because it's my job just to do whatever I can. And if every one of us did whatever we can, no matter how small or how big, we would get a momentum and see some change. That's what I think. But we also need some bigger solutions. A lot of the people that you mentioned, I'm not impressed with. I'm not impressed with any Al Sharpton. I'm not impressed with Jesse Jackson, but we do need some people to galvanize us, people that we can get behind and push to the front and say, come on, talk the talk that motivate, because Black people are so spiritual. Talk that thing.
That would also be like a question I would love to ask Jordan too. If we do have leaders, would you all listen? If there was a leader that emerged with some good, you know, literature about life and focus and journey and how to get to this promised land that we've been promised, would they listen? Because I feel like our generation, my grandparents definitely, but my mom generation, they had just started breaking from listening to the Al Sharptons and the Jesse. I mean, they listen, but they weren't as into it as, you know, Martin Luther King and the Malcolm X's, which was my grandparents' era. They weren't really into it like that. And I just want to know if they do have leaders, are y'all willing to like...
We'll give them some real leaders like H-Rap Brown, like Stokely Carmichael, like the people who founded the Black Panther Party, not the watered down turncoat people that every time something comes up, they call them. And
they know I love you.
I think that we may just be out of time, and that's not a bad thing. But I know that we have some really good things to talk about next week. We have another guest coming on. Your brother's coming on next week, so I'm looking forward to meeting him. Is there anything else you want to hit on before we conclude? It seems like it went really fast this week, doesn't it?
Yeah, because of our guests. But I think that's our thing, where we just should just have, you know, certain people come on, because I want to have all three of my kids on, because you have taken a journey to Africa really quick, and I want to get them on here to let them know that's their next journey with me. I mean, I'm saving right now, and I've already told them, like, I've told them, y'all, we're going to Africa, and it's on.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to take my kids shortly.
Right. Yeah, well, hopefully we can take them together, because I was, you know, I've definitely told all of them, you know, like, y'all, you're
going. Are they interested in going?
When I say you're going to do something like that, they have no choice. When I say we're going to do something like that, is something I'm not going to take no for, because
but are they inclined to do it? Like, I understand what you're saying.
I think they would just be interested, you know. They would never be excited. Now, if I say we're going to Paris, they would be excited. If I say we were going to Australia, they would probably be excited also. But Africa is something that never was put in their face as glamorous, vacationist. It doesn't appeal to them like the others, you know, appeal. Okay. So no, I'm not gonna even lie and say that they're like, Africa, yay. No, they're just
totally on board. They're like, yeah. And then, you know, the one country I wanted to take them to has yellow fever shots and all that. And I'm like, I don't even wanna deal with that. They don't wanna deal with that. They're on board. Like, where are we gonna go? Okay, let's go. I'm good. That works. I'm fine. Oh, you wanna go those dates? Okay, I'm fine. They are on board.
See, so that's what I'm talking about. And I'm there. I'm there with you, but I'm trying to get my kids on board, which, yeah.
That's okay, because sometimes it's a process. And so as long as they're getting started on that process, then you know
the process I'm trying to get them to start. Alexa, I'm proud. I want you to be proud. That's all.
That's all. Good. Well, you're starting it, and you know what? It'll turn out ultimately, I think, the way you need it to. Well, another great episode. I'm looking forward to the next episode, and we'll try to maybe line up some more guests, think about topics that we can talk about, where we can have people come in and contribute, because I think that that's very helpful as well.
I do too, I agree.
All right, well, thank you all for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.